Blog Talk Radio.
TV aristocrat pulling rabbits from his hat. Oh well, I didn't know it worked like that. Sounds great until you do the math. And now people waking up, poking heads out of their stuff. What an expensive turtle shell. It's probably just as well, because I don't want to be the machine powered by the American dream. Now the people want the truth, but the truth, it can't be found. Well, it's just an artifact, and it's buried in the ground. And I know I'm to blame, let's call it by a true name. Well, I never held a gun, but I gave it to your son. And I watched as it lulled him to sleep with the hypnotic hum of the machine.
To the Legacy Forum. This is Robin and Harry Shivery coming to you from the Wild Boar Cafe again, one of our favorite spots here in Fort Collins, Colorado. You know, we bring the Legacy Forum to you every Monday night. No commercials, no paid advertisement, and a script that's just totally our own. It's just our way of giving back. trying to leave our legacy and talk to others out there and find out how they are leaving their legacy. Your life should be a self-written script. So it is not a dress rehearsal. Plan each day and just suck the life out of every day that comes your way. We're just here to let you know that your childhood dreams come true. Don't get beat down. Do not get where you're afraid to live your dream. You can call our show by dialing 347-677-0699. That's 347-677-0699. Or if you're listening to us over your phone and it's about to die and you want to catch us online, you can find us on the internet by going to blogtalkradio.com to hear tonight's shows and also pull up archived shows from the past. So you mix rest and dreams and contemplation and then add a Harry and you get things to know. So in between his nap, he came up with this week's list. Harry, what do we need to know this week?
Oh, I love being here at the Wild Boar with Aiden, Andrew, Hans, and Eric, a wonderful place. But know this, the recent Supreme Court Hobby Lobby decision highlights hypocrisy. Yes, my friends, people will use religion to justify almost anything. The family that owns Hobby Lobby denies their employees contraceptive coverage as a health care benefit, but know this. Hobby Lobby has made money by investing in contraceptive companies. So their religious beliefs allow them to make money from a product they deny medically to their employees. Know these. Of the seven founding fathers, John Adams, Benjamin Franklin, Alexander Hamilton, John Jay, Thomas Jefferson, James Madison, and George Washington, those are the seven key founding fathers. Only John Jay could be considered an Orthodox Christian. Know this. President Abraham Lincoln won the presidential election of 1860 with 39.8% of the popular vote. Know this. Fingernails do not sweat. Know this. Jimmy Carter is the first president of the United States to have been born in a hospital. Know this, local honey. Okay, that's all I know for this week.
Well, I know you're talking about a different type of local honey, but that's just one thing I'm going to give a shout out to you right now that I do enjoy as we're traveling is going to the Drake Road Farmers Market. So I'm going to give a shout out to the Drake Road Farmers Market. Man, they do a great job there, and we picked up some great fresh produce and some great local honey. And again, Harry, you know how he likes to tease you and just give you a little information along and along. But I'm sure you're going to be hearing lots more about local honey. So it's that time of week, that part of our show that we do look forward to having a special guest each week. Last week, speaking of the Drake Road, we had met the Sears. That was Sean and Brian, that two-part band that sounds like a huge band when you hear their CD. They put out some great original music. They joined us last week, and it was great to hear from those guys. This week's special guest is pretty near and dear to my heart. A few years ago, I went through yoga teacher training with a special lady, and you develop bonds going through that type of program, of course. And then I have just so thoroughly enjoyed watching Mary Claire and her husband, Paul, over the past year or so on an amazing adventure that they joined us tonight to tell us about. Back in September of 2013, Paul and Mary Claire Hopkins quit their jobs and headed out on a 9-month adventure around the world. Yeah, around the world, not just around the U.S. Their adventure would lead them across the globe visiting 28 countries and making memories that will last a lifetime. Well, they're now back in Jacksonville, Florida, and Mary Claire just landed a teaching job in first grade, and Paul is coaching. Paul is coaching soccer and looking for a little additional work still before leaving this for their world tour, Paul was a soccer coach and a personal trainer, and Mary Claire taught elementary school and yoga. And, of course, like so many of us, they work random other jobs and just share. They have so much to share, so many skills. So they've shared with other side jobs for additional income. So they've been planning. They were planning this trip a long, long time, set a lot of the commitments aside, and took off on what turned out to be quite an adventure. And I'm glad to have them with us tonight. Mary Claire and Paul are on the other line here with us, and they're looking forward to telling us about some of the amazing landscapes they've seen, some of the crazy, incredible food, the awesome people, and also some of the things that they may have learned about themselves and their world. Transitioning right now back in Jacksonville, Florida, is posing some challenges after life of being, well, nomads and being on the move, but they're going to figure it all out, and they're taking a little bit of time out tonight to share with us. Mary Claire and Paul, welcome to Legacy Forum.
Good evening.
Good evening. Hello.
Hello. So happy to have you guys. I hope you can hear me smiling over the airwaves. I've just gotten so much pleasure out of watching your trip, inspiration to do a little thing that Harry and I are doing as well. And I thank you for joining us tonight. One of the things that we talked about was a list that you had a blog that you kept up while you were on your trip. And one of your last posts, you included a list about 40 things to know traveling. And I certainly want to touch base on that. But before we get into that list, Paul or Mary Claire, just give us an idea of what in the world possessed you to go see the world. How did y'all come up with this plan?
Well, it actually started back when we first started dating. Paul's from England, as you'll hear with his accent. I went over to visit him, and one of his friends from college, he and his girlfriend were traveling the world on a round the world trip. And it kind of put an idea in our minds that this would be something we would want to do eventually. And then a couple years ago, we went to Peru and stayed there for a month when I was on summer vacation. And once we got back, we knew that we had to start saving. And we wanted
you
to.
Were hooked.
Yeah, we were hooked.
Yeah, and we saved for about 3 years and planned as much as we could and then hit the road.
Well, there's only so much you can plan for. I know you're into educating in one way or another, training people, talking to people, teaching people, either through books or physical training. So you're used to learning. You're used to getting in there and getting that information out. But still, isn't that a huge task when you're looking at not just traveling across the U.S., but going out of the country? Isn't there vaccinations, and what about language barriers? How did you take care of that and get past that part?
We tried to learn. I mean, the amount of countries that we visited, it would be very difficult to learn all the languages, but we tried to learn your hello, goodbye, please, thank you, just so that we could. And sorry, yes. So that we could try and endear ourselves to the locals.
Well, I know that was number 20 on your list. Well, please and thank you, and do use that. And I know we were considering going to Paris not long ago, and one of the guidebooks that I read pointed out, you know, when you walk into a store in Paris, you say hello. When you walk out, you say goodbye. And sometimes, did you find overall that other countries were a little more courteous and that as Americans we're becoming a little less courteous, or was that true?
I found in most places people would greet you or, you know, there was just a good, you know, people were genuinely polite. It wasn't like some face value, like, you know, you get a lot of times from people here. But what we found that was really surprising, even in like the most remote parts of the world, is so many people, the locals speak English. Because, you know, they have growing tourism, especially in, like, Southeast Asia. we could communicate pretty easily.
Yeah. We met a Vietnamese villager that that hosted us and took us around her village and the surrounding villages in the north of Vietnam that speak English, French, Vietnamese, her native tongue, and I believe Spanish as well. And she had learned all those languages just by talking to people. It was quite impressive.
Wow. That is impressive. And you just mentioned Korea. What are some of the other countries that you guys visited? I mean, I don't expect you to be able to rattle off all 28, but just the main ones that come to mind.
I'll go down some of our favorites. Iceland,
yes.
Croatia, Hungary, Turkey, we went to Istanbul. I hated India. It was a love-hate relationship there.
more love, though.
Yeah, more love.
More
love. Actually, full on. Vietnam, Laos, Cambodia.
Thailand, Taiwan.
Australia,
Peru. Czech Republic, Italy, Belgium. they're all my favorite.
That's a lot of countries, and I'm sure that each one was different by their own right. They're just different customs, they're different architecture and landscaping. Oh, I just can't imagine. There's probably took thousands of pictures. What do you think your least favorite place was? I'm sure there's some places that you'd probably like to return to. So if given the opportunity to go there free, what one place would you not go back to?
Slovakia, probably.
Yeah.
Where was that?
Slovakia?
Yeah.
We were unfortunate. I mean, it seemed like a beautiful country, but we were there in the middle of winter, and it was too cold even for the locals, so we didn't really get to enjoy it that much. So I guess that was our least favorite of the trip.
Well, it sounds like there was something to take away from each place, and number 7 on your list was about food and not being afraid to try local food. Just expound on that a little bit, because I know, you know, we do have our own culture and way of eating, and other places do as well. So what was enlightening about that?
I'll go with most of the trip, I'll be honest, I was pretty safe with the food, because before leaving I was a vegan, and then I kind of edged my way back towards eating fish. So I didn't need a lot of sweet meat per se, but Paul can probably elaborate some on that.
I ate everything. I tried.
You were
everything.
Out to try it all.
Yeah. Well, we met a lot of great people. We went to an ashram in India, and we met a lot of great people there. And we were lucky enough to meet up with one of our new friends from the ashram when we went to Thailand. And he taught me his rule about street food, which was, it's so cheap that if you don't like it, you can just give it to a homeless person and keep trying. So I would see a million different things on the street, and I would try them all, knowing that if I didn't like it, there was a hungry mouth looking to eat it. So.
And I ate some things off the street, but, you know, I didn't have any stomach ailments. I had one episode in India, but we were leaving, and I ate baked beans and toast, and I don't know how I got sick from that, but I did. But to be honest, when we got back, this was when I had the worst stomach issues. Both are, because everything is so fresh everywhere. It's really crazy how much better people that live in impoverished areas eat. You would think the opposite, but all the preservatives.
Mary Claire, that's probably a show that we could have you back on. I know you're big into nutrition, and
I'm sure that that's exactly, you know, with my limited knowledge from eating all the fresh, non-processed, non-preserved foods and then coming home to the U.S. And, you know, even when we try, sometimes it's hard for us to avoid all those things. So I remember our mutual friend Danny and Tony from Germany, that was one of the things that they said really upset their system moving to the U.S. was getting used to our food. So, you know, hey, we might sit down other countries a little more than they deserve. And so I'm glad that y'all got out there and just really got to experience the buffet of the street markets. That was a great way to check out the local. That's what we try to do here is there's so many gardens and so much local produce to be found here, and we've really enjoyed eating that that local produce. And number 10 on your list, you were talking about staying healthy, so watching what you eat, and then you were also talking about running. So y'all do a lot of running and getting out and really getting into the communities where y'all stay?
I ran everywhere we went. Paulie runs when there's a soccer ball at his feet, so he's not a big runner, but I ran everywhere, like every single city we went to, I ran at least, you know, once or twice, a few times if we were there longer. But it was the best way to, like, find things that I wouldn't see normally, just walking around. Like, I would discover, like, cool parks or places to go, and I'd go back and be like, whoa, we got to go check this place out that I saw on my run. So it was pretty cool, and I never really felt unsafe, which was good.
Well, that was my next question, because, you know, you do hear so many stories, and we've seen way too many movies, and to have reasonable amount of caution and use, you know, a certain amount of sense, but then you don't want to be paranoid and afraid and not be able to get out and run and enjoy it. So that is good to hear. And did you just kind of go with your gut there, or did you do research in that area as well, or how did you know to feel safe?
I definitely did research. Like, when booking places to stay, I would always try to find a place next to, like, a big park, because a lot of the big cities we went to had really great parks in them. Or, you know, I just couldn't be observant, and when we were walking around, seeing, like, who, you know, were there out, see, were there people out running, were there women out running. I mean, I usually went real early in the morning when pretty much, you know, just, like, the bakeries that were opening and stuff like that. So, yeah, I got to smell fresh bread.
That
was fresh. Oh, wow. But, yeah, I would definitely, you know, I wouldn't put us in a bad part of town because I knew that I wouldn't want to do something like that.
So internet was key, going through researching the countries you were going to go to, and it sounds like you stayed in, like, a huge variety of places, like hostels and hotels and bed and breakfast-type places, ashrams. Sounds like, you know, you basically were open to stay at wherever you felt would be a safe, interesting place. What I found interesting on your list was three or four points that kind of brought it back around to get your nose out of your phone. You know, get your nose out of your phone. And it seemed like that was in every country. People had their noses down in their phone. And I'm sure you just miss a lot if that's the habit that you have. So speak to that just a little bit, because you said a few things in your blog and on even that list of 40 things that really speak to just absorbing where you are, absorbing the moment, and getting the most out of it. So speak to that a little bit.
Well, I had one episode. We were in, was it the Archaeological Museum?
I think, or it was in this really awesome museum, or it was in, like, the Blue Mosque in Istanbul. It was one of those two places.
Yeah. My brother met up with us when we were in Istanbul, and we're both history nuts. So we were walking around this super cool museum and trying to read everything and really take it all in. And people would literally walk in with their iPads stretched out in front of them and scan the room and then walk into the next room. And it just boggled my mind because they were there, but they weren't present.
Yeah, I would agree.
Awesome. We also found that cell phones and like smartphones have just made everyone just spatially unaware, and it's not just like an American problem or, you know, a Western problem. It's everywhere. People would be texting while walking down the street, and you get like run off the sidewalk, and you know, you realize it's just made everyone idiots, even though they're called smartphones.
Well, I'm sad to hear that it's not just us, but I'm kind of glad to hear that it's not just us as well. So I know that we have listeners, and even I remember being in the same room when you'd be telling people what your plans were, Mary Claire, and they would just be astounded, like, wow, how do you even do that? And, you know, some people work for 50 weeks a year, planning 2 weeks vacation, and even have a hard time squeezing out those 2 weeks to be away, and maybe even coming up with the logistics of how to do it. So, you know, I know that, as you mentioned, that you began very early in your relationship plan. This was something that you wanted to do, but are there some brass tacks, maybe some, you know, just some black and white suggestions that you have to anybody that's listening that may maybe want to venture out, and maybe they're not ready for 9 months or 28 countries, but, you know, maybe a week or two. Do you have any guidelines that you think might be helpful to somebody that's planning a trip out of the U.S. especially?
Well, first of all, buy a passport.
a lot of people don't
Be proactive.
And just do it. Is the biggest advice you could give people, because I think we sit here and try and find so many reasons. I mean, I think we were even guilty of it. When we were getting close to our leaving date, we were sitting here saying, you know, is this the right decision? Should we do this? And then, you know, when we actually hit our first destination, which was Iceland, we never looked back. Because, I mean, we had the most amazing experience there. We met amazing people, and it just continued on from there. So I think if you just buy a plane ticket and say, I'm going to leave and I'm going to go for a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and you kind of just dip your toes in the water, then you're going to be hungry for some more. So
yeah, and we met so many, like, we didn't know what to expect. We were thinking we'd meet, like, you know, kids just out of college, because, I mean, I'm 28, and, you know, I thought, you know, I'm not going to see anybody my age who quits their job and travels. But we met so many people who were, like, doctors, lawyers, architects, people from all walks of life that did the exact same thing from all over the world. We met some Americans, Canadians doing the same, you know, trails as us. Like, we meet up with them in different places, and I was just really impressed with how many people actually have the same kind of spirit as we do.
Well, there is a saying that says, all that wander are not lost. And I certainly think that to be true. And it is, it's a big world. It's a big U.S. I mean, if people could just take, say, perhaps the state that they're in and look around, you know, a 100-mile radius of what maybe they could go and see that they haven't seen, and just begin to get out, I believe, like you and Paul both have said, you kind of get the fever, it kind of gets into your skin, and you want to see more when you get away from your specific neighborhood and the culture that you're used to, and you just begin experiencing, seeing how different just traveling across the U.S. one state is from
mm-hmm.
another. I think that it can be that catalyst that gets you out there wanting to see more. And I've got to have you allude a little bit on chapter 39, just expand a little bit on number 39, selecting your travel buddy. Your pictures, like I've told you, I have enjoyed your blog throughout your trip and your Facebook. And part of the reason is you're just this stinking cute. And I love your pictures no matter where you are in this country or in this world. And just tell us a little bit about selecting the right travel buddy. Y'all were in each other's back pockets, as you said, for a while. You didn't get where you just wanted to, like, you know, happen to leave somebody on a bus or something?
No, I mean, we never, like, I don't know. We did really well. Like, I was kind of nervous. I was like, okay, we might have, like, days where I go do my own thing or he'll go do his own thing. But we were just so, you know, we have a common mindset and we want to go out and do things together and we want to see things and meet people and just enjoy the time that we had because we knew it wouldn't last forever. I don't know. Do you want to add anything?
I think we're both pretty laid back and easygoing, so it made it very easy to just be around one another for so long with no breaks.
And, like, being a teacher, you know, it's my nature to plan and organize, and, you know, I just took on that role, and I think I did pretty well.
I see you did very well.
But, you know, we just want to enjoy it and, you know, yeah.
Well, I think that if I'm remembering correctly, I saw a post a couple of weeks ago stating y'all were having your four-year wedding anniversary, your World Cup wedding anniversary. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, happy anniversary.
Unfortunately, England didn't do very
I was just about to ask. I hope someone that you're still following is still in the running.
No, unfortunately, England didn't do well in either of the World Cups. So
we're not watching the World Cup anymore.
Oh, yeah, of course. Always. I'm a soccer fan, but
course.
I'll always watch it. But it's nice that our anniversary falls on the World Cup, so now I don't have to be disappointed the whole month when England get knocked out. I have something to celebrate at least.
What great strategy, Paul. Great strategy, and you just made a few points right there, I am quite certain. Lastly, number 40, you said to be open-minded. Unfortunately, I have a little friend that she was younger, but I mentioned to her about traveling, and she said, I don't want to go anywhere. I don't want to be around people that are different than me. And I was astounded. I was so sad, and that's certainly not open-minded. And you say number 40, being open-minded is critical. So in what way did you find being open-minded helped your travel?
Well, it just opened so many doors to doing so many different cool things with people that were native to the places we were staying, I guess. And, you know, if you go in somewhere into a new, like a foreign country, and all you do is eat at Chili's or McDonald's and you stay in a hotel and you don't leave your hotel, you know, that's not going to do you any good in the long run.
And I'm a big believer that you get back what you put in. So if you go into a new experience with an open mind and an open heart and you really embrace the culture and the people and the history of these countries, then you're going to get back a great experience because the locals are going to open up to you and they're going to help you to experience things that you wouldn't if you went in with that negative mindset of, oh, I just want to be around like-minded people. I just want to do this, what I do at home. And, you know, it's...
You're doing yourself a disservice when you do that, I think.
Yeah, most definitely.
Well, that makes sense because you can sway the corporations and the chains around. You could travel the country and the world and go to Applebee's, like you said, in pretty much every country and stay in your hotel room. And even though I know the different hotel rooms have different amenities and are a little different from country to country, you still don't get that experience. But getting out, walking, running, getting to know the people, shopping in the local markets, all of those are things that y'all mentioned that will help you walk away from that country to, like, kind of immerse yourself in it a little bit, I would imagine. I think Harry has either a comment or a question. Harry, what you got?
Well, I just am flabbergasted. I mean, I'm just envious, and I admire both of you guys. I mean, it just amazes me that you have the courage to do that at such a young age. Usually, you know, you get old and then you realize that you should have done it, but you went ahead and did it before you get old. Now, I've got a question. I got a couple of questions. One, if it was legal, moral, and ethical, if you had a method of creating the income that would allow you to continue your travels, would you consider that?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, so the only thing that holds you back would be income.
Yeah, probably.
Awesome.
Yeah, we saved a lot of money, and it's hard watching that money just deplete all the time.
Yeah, it goes down. It doesn't go up.
Well, there are methods, but the reason I wanted to bring that out is sometimes in our life we allow money to dictate the quality of our life, and I wanted people that listening, whether it's one or a million and one, to hear you tonight, realize that there is a world that awaits, and it just takes a courageous attitude to go out there and do it. Now, what are the – I need to know from each of you. By the way, Paul, it fascinates me. You may not really know who this guy is, but you're not just your accent, but the way you enunciate a lot of your words, you remind me of John Lennon.
Well, thanks. That's a very big compliment.
I'm a John Lennon fan, and I'm just amazed at how, not just the accent, but the way you accentuate certain words. But anyway, what are the top three lessons you guys learned that we all should know about your travels? What are the top three lessons?
You want to go first?
Yeah. I would say my number one is that people are amazing. We met so many unbelievable people on the road, and you know, it really opened our eyes and made us realize that there are so many experiences that we still can have. You know, it seems like we've done so much, but we feel like we've barely scratched the surface. So I think all the experiences that we've had with all these amazing people have, you know, really broadened our horizons and made us realize that there's a lot more living to be done. So that would be my number one.
I would say when you have the chance, stay with local people. A lot of places we went, we stayed with local people, and that really made our experience. That leads to number two. It's not really about the country or, like, you know, your favorite place. The experiences that you had there. You know, a lot of places are beautiful and they share different things. But really, like you said, it's the people that make the difference. And I guess my other one, just don't even think about it. Just, you know, make a plan and just go. Like, if you are considering doing long-term travel, don't let people, you know, bring you down or doubt you. You can't listen to them, you know, questioning your reasons. Just do it for yourself, because really in the end it can only benefit you.
Yeah, and I think my number two and three would be eat everything, because you never know when you'll have a chance to eat something that's truly amazing in a foreign country again. And then the last one would be, don't overplan, because there were a lot of times when we were offered opportunities, but unfortunately we'd already booked flights or buses out of the country, and we didn't quite have that flexibility to take these opportunities up. Luckily, that didn't happen too often, because we left ourselves a little wiggle room in most places. But I guess that would be my top three.
Well, I thank you for being on tonight, because the lessons you just gave us can be applied to life. People are amazing. Stay with local people. Ignore the naysayers and just do it. Eat everything. And don't overplan. You can apply that to life, because those rules that you just gave, those things that you just learned, if you'll hold on to them and apply them to the rest of your life will be so full that your legacy will be worth remembering and talking about for generations to come. Again, thank you for being on. Robin's got more to say. So, again, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the John Lennon compliment. That's great.
You guys definitely have made some wonderful memories, whether or not a single souvenir was purchased. You created memories in your brain, you know, and in your heart. And I do hope that, you know, y'all are little people in the nursing home one day just sitting around rocking, having the best stories of the whole nursing home. But you guys won't end up in a nursing home. You'll end up in some crazy little place just running and playing soccer until you're 90. I just know you will. It was certainly a pleasure having you guys on now, listening in, and they wanted to contact you personally. Would they go to your blog spot, or is there an email that you could give us, or some type of contact information that somebody's like, oh, wow, I really wanted to go, you know, to some of the places that you guys mentioned. Would there be a good way for them to get a hold of you?
Sure. My blog is whereishopkins.blogspot.com, or I'd be happy to answer emails. My email is mchopkins@gmail.com.
mchopkins86@gmail.com.
mchopkins86@gmail.com. And
yes.
whereishopkinsblogspot.com. So beautiful.
Yes.
Those are two great places to catch up with Mary Claire and Paul. As you can tell, you're listening in with us tonight. They're a great couple, have much to share. And just one last question, when's your next trip and where are you going?
New
Orleans.
Yeah, New Orleans.
In October.
October.
We're going to do a little stateside trip.
Yeah, we want to do what you guys are doing, head out to the West Coast. It looks gorgeous from your pictures. So we're jealous of you right now.
I can't get enough. This area of the country is incredible. So I'm glad you're enjoying those. And as I've told you, you've been a source of inspiration for me as we've traveled stateside. And I'm sure you have been for others. So thank you once again for joining us on the show tonight. And we'll stay in touch. And the next time you have some travels or some wonderful wisdom in the series, love to talk to you about some nutrition, Mary Claire. We'll get you guys back on here. We'd love to have you on the Legacy Forum anytime.
Great. Thank
you. Thank you so much for having us. It's been a lot of fun.
All right. It has been. You guys have a beautiful night. Take care. We're going to leave you with just a few moments. We're going to go on a quick break here. A little Amy Hendrickson song we haven't played in a little bit. Just a little piece of it here, Small Town Tyranny.
I don't know if you've talked to her or anything.
I haven't seen her.
Oh, my gosh.
Why, what's she doing?
Well, until then I told her.
What?
Yeah, and until I told her.
Well, what'd you say?
Well.
Broken heart and all its broken hearts. I'm free from the small town tyranny. Yeah. Every day is just the same, looking for someone to blame. Well, it's up and down and right is wrong again. bad luck and out the pain. How much history I have. Well, it's like a bird who flies with broken wings. I'm free from the small town tyranny.
Oh, love me some Amy Hendrickson. You know, technology, for the most part, has not allowed us to live a life of total leisure, as predicted decades ago. The current reality is that we see many people resign to an extensive period of unemployment, underemployment, or even temporary work. People are familiar with the unemployment figures, and most of us know someone who had to settle for temporary work. But let me tell you, underemployment is a real threat to our way of life. Underemployment has become accepted, and that, my friends, is wrong on many levels. Just because someone is employed does not mean they are able to meet their financial obligations. It's not. I would challenge anyone making $65,000 a year to all of a sudden stop and live on $25,000 a year. Do it just for 1 year and see if your bills get paid on time and in the full amounts. A job just above broke is not enough for a nation's financial security. I do not care what Fox News says about the lazy middle class or the Wall Street pundits glorifying corporate profits or even what politicians say about increasing the minimum wage. What I care about is people working their asses off and just barely staying afloat. When profits are at an all-time high for corporations, why are not wages for the employees rising? I must question the conservatives when they talk about trickle-down economics. Laffer's economic curve is a devilish lie, and trickle-down economics has proven itself to be more, no more than an imaginary carrot. Portion of all men holding any kind of job in the United States is 63.5%, the lowest figure since 1948. Middle-income jobs are disappearing for a wide range of jobs. For example, in the financial sector, the number of financial counselors and loan officers ages 25 to 34 has dropped 40% since 2007. Outpacing the 30% drop in total jobs for the profession. In the industry, we are witnessing, in that investment industry, replacement of financial analysts with quantitative analytical systems. And four traders are being replaced with algorithms. Mutual funds and traditional portfolio managers now compete with ETFs, that's exchange-traded funds, many of which offer completely automated strategy. Our institution of economic employment is being restructured. Professionals are suffering the impact. The number of hours logged by legal assistants fell 12% from 2007 at some of New York's largest law firms. Architectural graduates ages 25 through 29 had the highest unemployment of the 57 degree programs surveyed by the U.S. Education Department in 2009. Something's wrong. Jeremy Rifkin talked of such a dilemma in his book, The End of Work, written many years ago. We failed to heed his predictions and have helped retool large corporations, but we have done little to retool middle-class Americans. Sarah Horowitz, founder and CEO of Freelancers Union, argues that the jobless future is here. Many people are already combining part-time work just to get by. She writes that as of 2005, 30% of the workforce has participated in this freelance economy. And this entrepreneurial activity has reached an all-time high in 2010. Now, the problem is most Americans still to this day trade their hours for dollars and becoming an entrepreneur seems, well, I guess almost impossible to them. Some people, and I'm talking mostly baby boomers, still define careers as working in the same role, same job, or even in the same career field for their entire life, for at least the majority of it. With the speed of technology and the speed of technological change and the prospect of long-term economic problems, that's just not realistic anymore. The reality, my friends, is that life in general and working lives in particular are getting longer. No one can rely on any organization or even governments to provide secure work for them. In the near future, it will not be uncommon for people to work well in their 70s and 80s, and retirement that we all dreamed of will be something of past generations. Some career experts offer some startling predictions and advice. You know, a person I've admired for many years, Jeremy Rifkin, contends we are entering a new phase in history, one characterized by a steady and inevitable decline of jobs. He says the world of work is being polarized into two forces. One, an information elite that controls the global economy, and the other, a growing number of displaced workers. Penelope Trunk, co-founder of Brazen Careerist, suggests the younger generation, because it's a waste of time and resources, and it no longer guarantees a long career, let alone employment. And for those that know me know I disagree, somewhat disagree, and because attending a university is more than getting a job. You go to a university to get an education. An education is something that outlasts a job and provides lifetime benefits. You go to a trade school to get a job. Penelope also recommends internships, starting your own company and not presenting yourself in a linear way on your resume. Now, this I agree with. Because, see, I received 4 years of vocational education after graduating high school, and then I attended college to receive my academic careers. I started my first corporation after 4 years of vocational education, but before I received my academic education. We have hurt our young people by confusing education with employment. You receive a vocational education to get a job. You attend the university to get an education. Never before has this been so important to our country. If you're attending a university to get a job, I would tell you there are better ways to dedicate your time. If you're attending a university to get an education and improve your quality of life, then you are there for the right reasons. Today, people need to gain employability rather than secure employment. To survive, employees need to have survival skills. Employees who continue to practice their skills repetitively without improvement or flexibility run the risk of making themselves obsolete. Specialized computer programmers who have no other IT skills serve as an example of being good at your job while the damn job disappears. An example, the computer language known as Fortran. Fortran is an engineering language that I once knew. Showing my age, I know, but Fortran is now out of demand. There is no demand for Fortran experts, regardless of how good they are. All across our country, people are scared, and the wrenching dilemma for the people is what will happen to our careers. Each of us must ask ourselves, what is the purpose of work? It means to pay bills, a process for self-actualization, status or social position, to sustain a desirable lifestyle, to provide financial profits for owners and shareholders. I present to you that you are your career. If you're one of those millions of people who self-identifies lies in your vocation as opposed to who you are, you may find yourself with an increasing self-identity crisis. Employers know and often disregard research indicating that providing meaningful work to employees is the most important contributing factor to a high level of engagement. People desire meaningful work, but the question remains, are they finding it, and who's responsible for providing that meaningful work? Whose responsibility is it for an individual's career? As our economic institutions restructure, as we go through a paradigm shift with dramatic implications, as our American culture redefines work, you must take responsibility. You must take responsibility for managing your own career because you are your career. Don't wait until you're fired, laid off, burned out, or fed up to revitalize yourself. Most people wait until it happens to them and they say, now what? Don't become a now what person. Realize that the old social contract is dead. The 40-40-40 contract has expired. Think of yourself as an entrepreneur. Embrace change. Read Who Moved My Cheese? It's one hell of a book. Who Moved My Cheese has happened. The question is, have you noticed? Establish and develop a strong and professional network. Brand yourself and protect your brand. You need to determine your legacy and define what you deem to be your personal success. That is your career. The reality is that the American image of a career is obsolete and not likely to return. There has never been a better time, and never a better opportunity, nor a more pressing moment in our lifetime to change our personal paradigms of personal economic progression. You are your career.
Wow, sound of crickets. That's what that was. Bringing us to this quick segment on yoga. Tonight I just wanted to share, I was looking back on some pictures of our week this week. We had the opportunity to get to travel over to Utah to the Arches National Park and Canyonlands National Park. And one of the biggest thrills that I got out of the trip was doing yoga poses on some of the most incredible rock formations in front of some of the most incredible rock formations and landscape and scenery that I've ever laid my eyes on. So just wanted to throw that out there. Looking at some of the pictures, they're not perfect. They're certainly not Robert Sturman, and they're certainly not the Yoga Journal. But I was pretty grateful to be, I'll go ahead and say it, a 50-year-old lady, still able to catch some of these moves. And it just seemed like these rocks, these boulders, these canyons just begged out for some certain yoga poses. So I had a lot of fun. So if you're a yogi, don't be afraid when you go out there traveling. Try some of your best moves. Get into some of your most peaceful moves and take some pictures. Have a good time. Remember to look at Open Road Yoga with Robin always on Facebook.com. to see what's going on, where we are, and see what crazy yoga poses Jerry has managed to snap of me. Hopefully we'll have some new ones coming out real soon. So take a look at Open Road Yoga with Robin. So that's all I have for yoga, and we're moving next into the very, very end of the show that I know that many of you look forward to. Just wait to hear what we have for you this week, and you know what that means. It's time for
Weird News.
In Texas, individuals or groups seeking to modify the weather must first contact a local newspaper. The requirement is part of the Texas Agricultural Code, which reads, and I quote, "A notice of intent to modify the weather must be published at least once a week for 3 weeks, 3 consecutive weeks in a newspaper of general circulation in each county in which the operation is to be conducted. And I'm serious about that.
Weird news. Weird news.
Every week I just love the technical difficulties of trying to rear its head and slow me down, but that's not happening. We're going to handle everything on the Legacy Forum each and every week to bring some fun, interesting stuff to you guys. Thanks again to Mary, Claire, and Paul for joining us tonight and this crazy, wonderful staff at the Wild Boar. We got Aiden, Andrew, Hans, and Eric taking care of us tonight. If you're in the Fort Collins area in Colorado, do make sure that you eat here. There are probably more restaurants per capita in Fort Collins than anywhere else, and it's hard to decide. But we've eaten here quite a bit, and it's always been good. Thank you for joining us this evening. Email us at legacyforum@yahoo.com. And now go out there and make somebody else happy.